This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politics. Politics.
Eita, Dumelang, hello, how's it? Welcome to another edition of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politics. My name is Fresh. My partner in crime, rhyme, and grime is Botsang Modimowame Muirwa. Brother B.
Good morning, DJ Fresh, the followers and the viewers. Yeah, partner in crime indeed. It looks like we committed a crime last week that caused the havoc.
Grand.
I can't complain, my brother. I'm okay.
So your court issue seems to have ruffled a couple of feathers last week.
It has.
Are we able to talk about it?
We can. Look, Fresh, I've always said, you know, when people say you've got a matter in court or before the courts, it is sub judice or sub judice, whatever the term they use, and you don't want to talk about the merits of your case.
Sure.
Because you may seem to be influencing your case or trying to influence the court, or actually muddying it by talking about it in the media. But what people were not commenting about or they were commenting about is that we didn't talk about the merits of my personal matter.
And there was a reason we didn't talk about the merits.
Yes, there was, because it's, as we said at the beginning,
it's still in the courts. Yes.
It's still in courts. But we spoke generally about the injustices of the justice system in South Africa. We spoke about how the justice system, the judiciary, the jurists, which are lawyers, as well as the laws of the country, are supposed to be serving the people, and they are failing to be serving the people they were intended for. And that looks like it has rattled quite a number of feathers. I got a call from a former minister who I'm very close with, a current minister who thinks we were attacking the jury. And I said, if we were, then that's good. Who said the jury or the judicial or the justice process in this country cannot be questioned? That is for that reason that liberation movements, and that's the first part, getting calls from politicians, not threatening me, not fighting, but raising issues of concern. And I felt like, but I'm not a politician.
What was the biggest issue of concern?
The biggest issue is us going out loud to say, to mention examples of, for example, how the Labour Court of South Africa is a high court, yet when the government took a decision to put all files and documents of the high courts in the country, it was decided they should be electronic. And the Labour Court, which is at the heartbeat of people's lives, and was left out. And remember, we questioned it. Why is everything at the Labour Court still its pampers lying around on corridors? If you go there, it's a mess. Truth.
No, I know for a fact that even the filing system is almost non-existent.
Exactly.
Because you find files lying about, you find rooms with files just... And how do files not disappear or not get thrown into disarray when it's such a messy situation?
And our question was, why would the government leave that? Understand? Why would the DDGs, the chief directors and the commissioners and everybody else who's involved in a process of developing policies and rules that makes governance easier, why would they leave that out? And I've said very clearly, you know, most of the lawyers or people who went to China, and I talk for black people, they were driven and influenced by the fact that something unjust has happened in your life or you have witnessed it. And you thought, I'm going to study law, not only because of passion, but because I want to aid and assist in the unjust process of the laws. Some were influenced by politics. When I wanted to be a lawyer, I was influenced by the likes of the then advocate, Justice Dikham Moseneke, who was a very young Pan-Africanist activist and became one of the first black advocates in this country. I was influenced by the likes of the then Mokgweng, you know, who was a very junior lawyer and so forth. And I'm like, these people are liberation movement activists. They are lawyers. They are representing the people. The George Bizos that represented the Rivonia trialists. And I saw my role in politics through the judicial process of being a jurist. There are people who became activists from the microphones, like, you know, the Miriam Makeba of this world.
Sure.
And I'm concerned now that you know, Fresh, I received 52. I was counting 52 calls and messages from 52 people. 40 of them, I don't even know them. I've never met them. I've never talked to them because our contacts are in a public space. 40 of them, they come from the legal background. And I don't know them. Lawyers. You know, I've sent you a message and I've shared it in various platforms of some of the comments I received from people who are senior advocates, who are lawyers, who are attorneys, who are operating in various courts, not only the labor court. And people will tell, you know, one of the first messages, and I won't mention people's name. It's somebody who says to him, ah, that court, yes, in order to get a date in that court, you must pay. Must pay money.
Are you for real?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And I've experienced it myself at a labor court. I've heard an advocate saying to me 2 years back when I was looking for a date in the labor court from the CCMA, an advocate friend saying to me, a lady saying to me, you know, Botswana, my own sister is in the Northwest because Gauteng covers the Northwest, Limpopo, and what do you call it, Mpumalanga, you know? And this person was saying, my own sister, who's an attorney, will go and get a date in court. And while I'm still queuing for 2 years, and my sister said, if you don't want to pay, that's how it works in the country. In a sense, so that defeats the ends of justice. That defeats the intended purpose, because why should I bribe? Because that's corruption, that's bribery, and we must call it what it is. That when people have to pay a clerk of the court, a clerk of the register or the register, somebody in the register's office in order to get a date before others. It's the same level of corruption that has been happening in other government departments where when you apply for your passport or your ID, you queue before the others because you bought cool drink. When you've got issues with the police, your docket can be augmented or disappear because you paid a bribe. And my question and my discussion was, with you last week, if we have arrived at that moral level where those who are supposed to be the protectors of justice are doing injustice to the people, where else can human beings run to? We can't run to the police because they are corrupt. We run to the courts because we think we'll get justice, and you find that even in courts, there is injustice. Now you find lawyers who are supposed to be representing us crying about the injustice and the corruption in courts, especially the administrative part, not the judges, because judges come at the end. Not to say they may not be involved. You know, somebody said to me, but remember, these are all human beings. These people are human beings. And that is the problem I'm sitting with the society to say, now we must be afraid to talk about our own real life experiences as if these things are not happening. In my view and opinion, once you know of corruption, maladministration, and wrongdoing, and you go silent about it because it doesn't affect you, you're an accomplice to that process.
You're complicit.
Yes, you're complicit to the process. You because you're endorsing it, you being quiet, until it hits at home, until it happens to your sister, your cousin, your child, or any, or even your best friend, then you start choking and making noise about it. If we don't expose these things, but people are afraid, Tatum. I'm noticing something in the country. And one lady said to me, she's a doctor and an activist. And she says to me, you know, Botan, you are looking for a spine in a jellyfish, and you're not going to get it. Because I'm expecting people to rise. But I will tell you and the viewers why our people can't rise the way we stood up against the apartheid regime or any other thing. It is because of the debt we live in. We are indebted, both morally and materially. We are indebted to those who are supposed to be our principal and political leaders, that we can't even question their moral high ground. You understand? We can't question our CEOs, our ministers, our DGs, because they have employed us. They are in charge of our promotion. They are in charge of our salary increments. And if you don't draw the line and you question them, you may find yourself on the streets like Bobotang. And that's a debt on its own. You understand? That's the kind of society as Black people we have created over the years. Forgetting that even if you went to school, you can even question your school of thought.
Yes.
Even if you are a lawyer, I made an example to my own advocate, Advocate Mbada. I said, Advocate Mbada, you know, I was laughing at him because that the first time I see him with this, you know, the shirts they wear, some they've got frills. Some,
the blouse.
The blouse, yeah. I'm like, why yours is different? I thought it has, it had to do with rank. Because his, it's like a bow tie and it has two...
Something like tassels or whatever.
Yes. And he said, no, it's my choice. And I'm like, so which man goes and decides to wear a blouse? Why? We challenge the colonial era laws as a country. Part of the formation of the liberation movements in Africa, it's neo-colonialism.
Yeah, to decolonize as much as we can. Yeah.
And we still sit, and none of these laws, including my favorite advocate, Sikakan, including Dalimpov, including Mokwe Mokweng, who all of them were political activists in their own life. They go, they graduate, they get swallowed into the same process, wear black and white with a blouse. And then they were against the 1960s, 1912 rules and laws. But they are in court implementing those laws because those laws have not been changed by the lawmakers. Lawyers and judges are not there to make the laws.
Sure.
They are there to implement the laws or interpret the laws.
Interpret and apply.
And apply.
Yes.
But why are these former activists who are now lawyers and judges not pushing the lawmakers to change and amend the laws? That, I mean, imagine sitting here being judged with the Criminal Procedure Act of 1966. What nonsense is that? And lawyers will tell you, no, we can't. You can't address the judge like that. But nonsense, it's nonsense. What should you call it? And then they talk of the decorum. My lord, I've got a problem with addressing judges as my lord. Where does it come from? Lord so and so of the British House of whatever. Why are we still doing that as African people? Why should I not go to court?
But I think maybe there's a reason why there are certain standards that you're held to. Because the minute we start unraveling just one bit of thread, then where do we stop? And I'm certain there are bigger issues of justice than what we wear and what we refer to Lord, Milady, as you will, my lady. I think the bigger issues than that. And it's probably why no one is making noise about it. And honestly, I don't care what they wear. Not for me, the issue is justice. Is there a miscarriage of justice? And miscarriage of justice also looks like people who can't get a date at the labor court. People who have not been paid. You haven't been paid in 2 years.
Yeah, 28 months.
And no one cares about what you have to eat, if you have food, if you have electricity. Does your daughter even have the Danone for Sgela this week?
Yeah.
No one cares because it doesn't affect them.
But look at it. Look at how 3 weeks back, this week, it's exactly 3 weeks since a judge of the labor court issued a directive, an order, a judge, not me, an order by a judge of the labor court to the register of the labor court and say, can you give this gentleman a prioritized date to come back to this court and we finish this matter? 3 weeks, no wait.
And it's not like they don't know whether there's availability or not.
And it's not like we don't even knock at those doors to say, where are we? You understand?
Yeah.
But I am actually concerned about how South Africans have been muted and afraid to can raise issues that impact on their lives. Because this tomorrow may be at your door, maybe at the door of your neighbor or your colleague. And people are mute about this, people who have voices. And I've come to a point where I actually said, maybe it's a calling for me to rise and bring these things up. And maybe that's the part of me contributing to the liberation of the African mind.
Sure.
Because if our mind still was our judge, you know, we used to fear apartheid era judges and magistrates because of racism and the power they possess that they may send you to the gallows. But at this time of the so-called democracy, why would I be scared of a judge as if the judge is not a human being? I should actually respect the law if the law is just. But once the law starts being unjust, people will disrespect the law. That's why there's so much lawlessness in the country, because people are gradually losing confidence in the judicial process.
Sure, absolutely. But let's move on. We are in studio today recording because of studio availability. So by the time this airs, the new budget speech would have been read.
Yes.
What are we anticipating?
We can only anticipate and speculate.
Do you think the VAT is going up or not?
You know, Fresh, I've listened to so many debates and of various political parties. Now I want to focus on the ANC, the Democratic Alliance, because just the two of them, it's enough to can do this. The DA, until this moment when we are recording, has been saying there'll be no VAT that will increase.
Sure.
Let me tell you, the ANC is going to dangle a carrot in front of the DA, or they will only need IFP, Patriotic Alliance, and the PAC to can get, or any other party like the Good Party with 1 seat and 1%, to can get that budget to be voted in with 51% and it goes through. I do think that VAT will be increased, however, with a small margin, a small, not the 2%, maybe one.
I think they said maybe 0.75.
0.75 to 1. I think it's going to be between 0.75 to 1. The people may scream, may tumble. The ANC is not afraid of offending the mass-based voters. They are no longer afraid of that. They've passed that stage. That's why the ANC is in the forefront of bringing the VAT thing into it. And this opposition of the Democratic Alliance, I think it's cosmetic. And I'll tell you why. The Democratic Alliance, bigger constituency, it's business people, it's rich people, their biggest constituency. They really represent, not the voters, the people.
I was going to say, so what, the voters are just there for the numbers?
The voters are just, and only once every 3 years when there's local elections or national elections. But
we'll see them in 5 years and give them more T-shirts.
And give them more T-shirts and wheelbarrows and talk nice English to those who live in suburbs and increase the vigilance of security guards, which comes from the business sector, and the business makes money and the DA benefits. They satisfy their actual constituency, not the voters. I separate the constituents, which are members and followers and subscribers to your ideology. I separate it from the voters.
Okay.
Understand? And the DA,
so there's voters and then there's funders.
Yeah. And those who are funding the DA, the ANC, and all other this center-right parties, which are capitalist parties, they will be happy with that increase. Those who are talking for the people, the EFF, the controversies, the SARS, what we call SARS commissioner, and many other people who are saying not for the downtrodden people, do not do that. They are actually in minority in government.
But help me understand this, though, because like you're saying, SARS commissioner Keith Svetha said at the last budget non-delivery that there's no need to adjust the VAT.
Yes.
Capacitate us as SARS to be able to collect better.
Yes.
Then we'll be able to make that money back.
Back, yes.
Almost every economist that I've heard on radio just this week have said there are other ways of making up the shortfall.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a tax
increase. A tax, yes.
You know, there could be austerity measures here, austerity measures there. But we can make up this. And obviously, capacitating SARS to collect better, efficiently, etc. And going after those that are not paying.
Yes.
Despite this chorus that says that is a bad idea, why would they go ahead and increase the VAT?
They don't. It's a low hanging fruit. It's easy for them to have cash at hand. It's easy to collect VAT. The systems are there. It's easy
because us as businesses do it for them.
Yes, understand. We do it for them.
And every 2 months we are saying, "Here's more."
Yeah,
here's more.
And SARS systems in collecting VAT from whether it's supermarkets or retailers, it's easy and it's there.
My VAT was late. Literally by a couple of hours the other day. I got a call from SARS. Sorry, sir, your VAT is late. And there was a penalty.
Yes.
And the penalties are always steep.
It's effective.
Yo.
So it's it's low-hanging fruit, one, to collect VAT. They don't care about the people and the noisemakers and the economist ideas. They don't care. It's more complex to collect business taxes, especially for big multinationals, the mining companies. That's why SARS is saying capacitate us to collect this 800 million or whatever the amount is that they can collect. That's one. And Fresh, if you look at the South African economy, our VAT, if it goes to 17%, the 59 billion that the Treasury and the Minister Godongwana is talking about, it is much more easier accessible without work through value-added tax process than anything else. All other austerity measures, they will need politicians to tighten the belt.
Sure.
Understand? And they don't want to do that. And that's where the ANC will defeat the likes of the DA and the Patriotic Alliance and IFP, who were noisemakers outside the government. Now they are in government. They can't make that noise anymore. They can't talk of austerity measures anymore because they are equally benefactors of what we have been saying. That's where the government should cut. Tato, as way back as Zuma's administration, the DA, the IFP, General Holomisa's party, UDM, they were talking about how the cabinet is bloated.
Sure.
In the first term of Jacob Zuma. On the second term of Jacob Zuma, they tried to amalgamate and merge. You remember what they did? They reduced the number of ministers, but they increased the number of deputy ministers in the second term of Jacob Zuma. And these people still complain. Come the first term of President Ramaphosa, before this current term of the GNU, first term, the government became, cabinet became bloated. When people talk of increase in the civil servants or public service expenditure, they are not talking about wages. They are not talking about salaries. Salaries of ministers and these DGs, anyway, DGs will forever be there. Of ministers and deputy ministers, they are in an average of 2.2, 2.3 million per annum. It is other things that comes with them, like the benefits, the blue lights, the security guards, the extra house, the car in Cape Town, the car in Tshwane.
That ministerial handbook.
That ministerial handbook is the problem. I had expected the Democratic Alliance, that claims to be caring for the poor of the poorest, that says they don't want VAT, to say, but let's leave the VAT thing. We don't want this ministerial handbook.
Yeah, but Steenhuisen himself has blue lights parked outside the offices there near the East Gate.
And remember now, Steenhuisen lived in Cape Town all his life. He probably has a house that he's got, a government house now in Cape Town and a government house now in Tshwane. You understand? That was not there before. That's where the money is going. The other day on this platform, I once said it cost 44 million per annum to have one minister. And some people disputed it. No government official came and disputed with me because I'm not looking at a salary. I'm looking at the entire value chain of having a ministry. You know, I mean, I've mentioned things like the department, let me use, for example, the department of, which minister am I not scared of? Who's reasonable? No, not scared of the fact that Minister Motsoaledi at health. There's a departmental spokesperson. Then there's a ministerial spokesperson. Why do you separate the two? I don't say they must not create jobs. People want jobs. But to have a spokesperson of a department, it's a level of a DDG. Their salary is about 1.5 million per annum, 1.6 million. You have two people who are spokesperson, one for the minister. Why does a minister need a spokesperson? The department needs a spokesperson. You can even reduce those things and center them to the GCIS. Empower the GCIS, have a permanent CEO there or a DG of the GCIS. Let the government departments communicate through that entity of government that was created to talk on behalf of the government. Now you've got everybody talking. Understand? That's why you have the spokesperson of Cape Town City being able to can release a national or international statement on behalf of the country. It's because we are not centered, but we are spending money on those things. Why is President Ramaphosa and his GNU partners afraid to cut the cabinet? Why don't we merge other departments? Somebody made an example and say, and sorry to my favorite, you know, minister, Stella Ndabeni, if the Department of Small Business is not doing the intended purpose, I'm not saying they're not doing their work. I'm using it as an example.
Sure.
Take it to the Treasury where it used to be. It should be a branch within the Treasury. We've already saved 44 million in one by closing it down. Take it to the Treasury. Let it be a division or a branch of the Treasury, not the Treasury, the DTI, Trade and Industry, because small business is trading. Make it there being led by a DDG, for example. You have saved 50 million already in one department. It worked before. Not to say it didn't work. They wanted to create jobs for comrades in the past. They wanted to simplify things and breaking all these departments. I remember when I still served some company years back, we used to have projects of government. There used to be the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism.
Sure.
Now it's broken into three departments. So we had one minister, now we have three. And those are the austerity measures we should be talking about. Why are ministers flying between Joburg and Cape Town business class? Why are they not flying economy class? And then if you want to fight business, no problem, top it up. In the past, I've used an example of the United Nations. I like the United Nations policy. It says if your flight it's longer than 4 hours or 6 hours, that's where you can be upgraded for comfort because you're at work.
Sure.
But if it's a 2 hour flight, 1 hour flight, why should you fly business class? You know, a business class flight from Joburg to Cape Town is about $9,000.
Sure.
In economy class, it's about $2,000.
Mm.
You know, people may say these are small peanuts, small monies. Small monies times how many people?
I'd even go as far as saying maybe even pick the train. They must have a communal train. And then maybe if they take the train, we'll make sure that the trains are always working.
Yes, they will make sure the trains. Now, let me make an example. Another thing is, you know, I'm diverting from the budget. Just past week, President Ramaphosa comes to Joburg here where we are, downtown. As always, he's shocked about the state of the affairs downtown Joburg.
But Joburg has been deteriorating since 1995.
You are even going far. Where is Luthuli House? In the heartbeat, Sour Street, the heartbeat.
If you drive into Luthuli House, you can see the
Slums, the squalor, the portholes, everything.
The squalid conditions of Joburg.
Of the people. So why is President Ramaphosa attending his meetings at Luthuli House? Every other week, there's a meeting at Luthuli House of the ANC leadership. And President Ramaphosa is the president of the ANC. Do they want to tell me that the president of the ANC doesn't come to Luthuli House? Does he have only, what we call it, the meeting online, visual meetings? Doesn't he drive in Sour Street? Doesn't he drive with the M1 or M2? And drive into city of Joburg and see all these taxis refusing to move and telling police, hey, soga wena. Where does President Ramaphosa go, Kanti? And then you have G20 coming. Now there's a battle between Cape Town has raised their arm. And
say, Cape Town is always very cocky. Tina, we're ready.
We are ready. We can take over this thing from Joburg.
We need a venue here.
Tato, you know, if the African National Congress, that is the leading party in South Africa, and I still regard them as the ruling party, the DA and others can claim whatever they want. The ANC played them to be in the GNU. They were a liberation movement. They said they were formed for the people, and the ANC has never represented the people, maybe in the 60s and 70s. But I'm telling you, from the 80s, the ANC never represented people. And a lot of things can be said why. If the ANC represented people, and they are for the people, where they used to have meetings and rallies at Tom Hall, in they launched the Freedom Charter in Klipspruit, which is dilapidated now. They used to have rallies at Orlando Stadium or in college. Why are they taking these G20 meetings to Sandton and to Cape Town? Let them take the G20 meeting to Alexander Fresh so that their counterparts can see how they are misgoverning, misruling, and destroying their own people. When Trump says African leaders are stupid and they are destroying their own people, they are stealing from their own people, he's telling the truth. Because look at the majority of the voters of the ANC. Townships of Soweto, Alexander being the leading, and Eastern Cape, Limpopo and the Northwest. And those are the poorest people. And how does the ANC represent those people? When they don't care for them. The DA, we know, is very clear. But the DA is taking care of its white people in Sandton and in the city of Cape Town. And city of Cape Town, in this instance, I'm excluding Guguletu, Khayelitsha, Langa, and Cape Flats and all that. I'm excluding them. They don't care there. And we want to be told.
And the fact that the spatial nature of Cape Town has never changed, you know, at 5 p.m., there's an exodus out of town.
Yes.
All the blacks and the coloreds must go back to where they live. The train stations are
packed.
The buses are packed. The taxis are packed because then you must go back there
to your location that was created, the formation of the apartheid.
And not much has happened, especially in Cape Town, to fix that or to remedy that.
Let's leave Cape Town. Sandton.
Yeah.
Sandton, yeah. Let's go. One highway, it's Alexander this side and other places. Now, when we want to cut the budget and create money and make money in budgets, those are the things we should look for. And in the past, I spoke about verimentation of funds. When you do your KPIs, I like one thing that the DA is proposing on this budget thing. One of the things the DA proposed to the ANC says, you know, the DA is also talking in fork tongues. That's why I say by the end of today, after we record, the DA would have bent to the side of the ANC because the ANC will satisfy. The DA is carefully saying, if the ANC can come with KPIs of a long term on how they are going to create employment and boost business must grow, the economy must grow. The DA is talking two things. The economy must grow and unemployment must be tackled. That's all they are focusing on. They don't care about health, education, black economic empowerment, because they're not representing those people. If the ANC can bend and sign and say today, they will do it. But you know what politicians will do? The ANC can bend and sign today, and the whole year they don't deliver. The DA will come screaming next year. It will only be the second year of the GNU, you know, the second budget. All I'm saying is political parties lie to each other, mislead each other, but when they sit in corners, they don't care about what the people who will suffer. They don't care. And if the people of this country, then me and you, we do not rise in protest and say we are refusing that you do that. It's not that people don't like, I'm a Pan-Africanist, you know, self-suffer sacrifice is in my blood. You have to sacrifice something in order to get something.
Something's got to give.
And people will scream, will tremble, everything will go up, electricity rates, we'll still pay.
Yeah.
Those who don't pay, they cut. They cut the services, there's nothing we can do. And you think that's a caring government. There's no caring government.
You know what was jarring for me? And maybe it's because generally politicians take language for granted. I mean, for instance, my favorite politician, Panyaza. I mean, I love Panyaza. I'll always...
I know you're...
Even where I don't agree with Panyaza, I will always have his back.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that stood out for me was after President Ramaphosa did the photo ops downtown Joburg, and expressed shock and dimakatso, lehomakala, how Mayor Morero, le Premier Lesufi, apologized to the president about the state of Joburg.
Yeah.
Instead of apologizing to the people of Johannesburg for allowing the city to look the way it does. Because the apology should be to the people who have lost Joburg or who have to live in a Johannesburg that is a shadow of its own self versus, it's one thing to say to the president, we are sorry that we've maybe dropped the ball, but to the people of Johannesburg, we've let you down. We will do right by you. For me, language like that endears you to the very people who must still vote for you again in a year or two.
The answer is simple. It's what I said earlier on. They are not in touch with the people who are putting them in power. And they don't care or they're not in touch. They're lost. These people, they don't understand. Either they don't understand the economy or the wellness, the what do you call it, the, you know, wellhood or wellnessness of the people on the ground. And the welfare. And the sad part, DJ Fresh, is that these people grew up in townships or in rural areas. You know, I was thinking when I was coming to the studio this morning, the first time I met a minister, Enoch Godongwana, the minister who was presenting the budget speech. It was in 1994 at the Ford plant in Mamelodi. He was a unionist, and I was living with a guy called Nicky. Nicky was a shop steward at Ford.
Yes.
And Godongwana came to address them. So I went to Nicky's work to listen to a unionist. When that man talked, I'm like, oh, ANC has good communist members inside. This is the future. Today, the same Godongwana doesn't care about the working class that he used to make noise about. This last 3 weeks, I mean, why are the marching orders of the president if 2 hours before the budget vote, there's still no agreement? Where's COSATU? Where's consulting this whole thing? They're nowhere to be found or seen. And that's the kind of political leaders that we have. Either they don't care or they have no clue of what is going on. And they don't listen. This is the third sad part. They don't listen to experts who are their CEOs, their DD. If they can't listen to their tax collector, who's an expert in tax, who else will they listen to?
Yeah, but this is like you expecting Minister Nzimande, who is a communist, not enjoy the perks of being a minister.
If the communists really existed in South Africa, that's why we used to call them yellow communists. I doubt if they're in paper, when they talk of Lenin and Karl Marx and the communist friends in Russia, yes. But in real practicality, there's never been a communist. If the communists who were said to be the brains of the ANC for all over the years to say they are the thinking tank of the ANC, they would have influenced the policies of the ANC to be leaning to the left, unlike they are now leaning to the right. So there was never communism inside the South African Communist Party, except on the rhetoric statements and papers. And that's why all of them, they make noise. And once they climb into what the late Bishop Desmond Tutu said, the gravy train, the gravy is thicker and smaller now. When you cook and you boil your gravy more, the longer you boil it, it gets smaller, the quantity. And let me tell you why there's a rush to can loot more or to make more easy money. Is that the little that left, they must loot and go. Everybody must eat like the previous ones who have eaten and looted the state. That's why they don't care. You know, it's no longer even ethics or the moral fiber. It's these people, they do not care. They don't care whether there's no money in hospitals, they don't care whether there's no schools, they don't care about anything. There are four or five, what I call them, frontline departments of government. It's security, health, education, and if you want, you can add water there. You know, these are the frontline ministries or departments where if you were pro-service delivery, that's where you will want the biggest chunk of your budget. Then you have delivered to the people.
And it's such, you know, delivery is actually very low-hanging fruit.
Yes.
Delivery is such low-hanging fruit. But you need to want to deliver in a way that allows your people to get services, even if someone might decide they want a skimnyana on top.
Yes.
But the fact that people are deciding to take the cream itself.
And what do the people get?
And leave nothing for the people. Yeah. That's problematic.
And that is problematic. The biggest problem with South Africa, the budget. Look, South Africa has a trillions on the budget. It's a lot of money. It's one of the biggest budgets. I think the biggest in Africa. We don't have the biggest economy. At the moment, apparently, we are the second biggest after Nigeria. We were the first. Now, we keep on going up. But our budget is very big, like our GDP. The most of that budget, let me tell you, it goes to three things. And I'm talking as a public administrator. The bigger part of the cake doesn't go to the people. It goes to maladministration and misappropriation of funds. You know, fruitless expenditures.
Wasteful expenditures.
That's the biggest part of our budget as government. And you can ask any DDG, or you can even ask the Auditor General. The second part goes to corruption. You understand? The second part of the budget of this, it goes to corruption because prices get inflated so that the corrupt ones must get kickbacks. You find lawyers charging three times what they normally charge so that the CEO or the commissioner or the DG or the general must get a kickback. It's corruption. If we can deal with those two things, if we can jail people, we need 59 billion now as a deficit. We spend 2 billion on the Zondo circus. 2 billion, we could be looking for 57. Look at the Auditor General's report, how much money in the 2024-2025 financial year, which ends the end of this month. Go and look at how much went to fruitless expenditure by the government. And that's not difficult to fix. Charge people, jail them, fire them, prosecute them.
I'd even go as far as saying, let's have a department of abogogo, where they're given the budget, they must go spend for us.
Oh, the gogos, our mothers, who knew how to handle the money?
They would stretch a rand in a way no one else can. Let them then be put in charge of procurement.
And what will be the facts eat when the gogos are giving the people food? Remember, we must accommodate. We have to create a room in our house to create a money from the coffers of the state for civil servants who are tax.
In fact, Action SA asking for... say there should be new legislation when it comes to corruption, that you should get 20 years in prison for any corruption above half a million rand.
Well, what's wrong with the current legislation? That's not the problem. Is not the legislation; it's the application.
There's legislation already. If I steal a lollipop, I'm going to jail.
Yes,
the lollipop.
It's theft. Yes,
it's theft.
It's theft.
I might get a slap on the wrist, but if I steal another lollipop, I'm going.
Yeah. There are laws. The problem is not because there are no laws.
Yeah.
There are laws. The problem is the government is failing, and they're purposefully failing because it benefits them.
Mm.
You understand? They're purposefully failing. Courts, cases dragged in court for years.
Mm.
People die while they're still on trial.
Mm.
You understand? So those who are whistleblowers, they get fired, they get shot, they get killed. And again, I think also there's a lot of hands in the corruption in South Africa. A lot of hands. The media, the judiciary. There's a lot of hands involved in the corruption. So there are laws. Action SA must be pushing the government to say, when there's a case, let it end. Give things like time frames. Let the case end within a certain time frame.
Let there be justice.
Let there be justice. That's and I think that's where the challenge is.
We need to move on. We are running out of time. President Ramaphosa addressed Parliament on Tuesday.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. What happened there?
You know what? I watched that debate and question answer. President Ramaphosa is very good at avoiding answering questions. Eh?
Mm.
He avoids and he gets away with it. Julius, actually, in my books, I think Julius has become a seasoned politician in Parliament. Julius actually addressed President Ramaphosa. He actually exposed how the president is not conducting himself. And I don't know whether it is the president with the GNU, because the president is not supposed to be operating alone, or it is the president on his own not following processes. For example, the EFF raised, you know, through their leader, raised two important issues. One, it's when President Ramaphosa made that famous call to Elon Musk, as if it's a little boy calling bus, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
To say, but you came and you answered questions here in Parliament that you don't deny that you reached out to Elon Musk, who is a former South African who's causing chaos in the US. But how did you not talk of you engaging Elon Musk? You've got an envoy, Ibrahim Rasool, in the US.
Mm.
You didn't take him with, you didn't involve him. You've got a Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, you know, Ntatela Mola. You don't mention this guy, it's like he's not existing. You know, the last time we heard of Lamola, it was during the ICJ case. You know, we hear Lamola on ceremonial issues as if he's a ceremonial minister, while he's a very important minister of the country. And the president is not taking Lamola by hand. He's leaving Lamola behind. Why is the president handling diplomatic and international relations issues when he's got an envoy of any country? Why when it comes to business people?
Mm.
I don't say a head of state should not have working relationships with the business.
Mm.
But once you individualize it, it becomes a problem and you leave.
Why is it a problem? So, for instance, if he feels he can better influence Elon Musk than his own minister.
Yes.
Why shouldn't
you
do
it? Why do you appoint a minister that you are doubting his capability? Then it means you are doubting your minister.
It's not even about doubting the capabilities of your minister, because your minister is coming in at a level of diplomacy.
Yes.
And his department.
Okay.
You're coming in as, listen here, let's talk as from billionaire to billionaire.
Okay.
Can we discuss this?
How do you go and engage? And I'll make an example.
Yeah.
And Julius did that, or somebody else did that. I can't remember. You'll remind me. President Ramaphosa, in putting people like Ng Motshekga and General Lolomisa to answer questions to Parliament, he led the experts, the generals and everybody else to be with them, to answer with them.
Yes.
In engaging with Rwanda and the DRC, President Ramaphosa did let the Minister of Justice, not of Justice, of Defense, to engage the DRC directly.
Yeah.
He didn't interfere. It's interference. There's nothing wrong. You ask the question, there's nothing wrong in engaging Elon Musk. Mm. But the manner that it was done, especially that the American administration, of which Elon Musk is part of, is refusing to engage with us diplomatically as a nation.
Mm.
And I said, so it's like you are bowing. You are bowing. They tell you bow or bend. You are bending to the demands of those people, and as Elon Musk. But that was not the only issue, Tato.
Mm.
There was another issue that was raised in Parliament about President Ramaphosa after we have taken a position last year that we even chased the Israeli ambassador out. You remember that whole process we discussed?
Yes.
Then we got to learn now that last year in October, November, President Ramaphosa hosted the head of intelligence of Mossad from Israel in South Africa after we have chucked out their ambassador, and we are cutting diplomatic relations with them. Why would the president do that? Where was the intelligence for South Africa? Why would the head of Mossad come to South Africa to engage the president of the republic? It becomes a problem when everything gets centered in the presidency. It becomes a problem. Then you are pulling everything on your own. We've got a budget problem now that's going to impact. If this money is not released, it's going to increase our debt. The more we delay with this, there's an impact, by the way. It hits us on the debt of the country if the budget is delayed. Because we must have a budget to service the debt.
Sure.
And if we don't service the debt, the interest goes up. Why is the president not intervening?
But isn't there an allowance for that? That if there's a deadlock, then we stick to the previous budget until we...
Domestically.
Yes.
Domestically, we can. But you still have your foreign debt that you must service. The IMF want their money. You know, the World Bank want their money. The interest is very clear. When is the interest due? When on the balance. The president is not intervening on that one. It's the last day today. After he gave them 3 weeks to go and sort themselves, they haven't sorted themselves. He's not intervening. So the question becomes, when does President Ramaphosa interfere in the business of government? When does he not? You understand? One of the biggest problems in the Republic of South Africa is crime or kids dying in pit latrines. Why is President Ramaphosa not actually intervening directly on that one? Of kids not having classrooms. These are the things that are closer to the heartbeat of the people, to their lives and the well-being and of human beings in the country. And as the head of state, your people must be the priority. I don't say business is not important. I'm not saying that. The next thing we'll hear, President Ramaphosa will remind the Afrikaners that America has issued a statement on Tuesday on their website to say, now you can apply. The forms are there. Maybe we should apply the immigration forms to go to the U.S.,
At a diplomatic level, at what stage do you stop trying? And I'm not even saying stop trying, but more, we've reached out. You know we've reached out. Now we're going to carry on with our lives.
Yes.
Because there must be a point where you realize that, okay, I'm knocking on a door and it's not opening.
Okay, yeah.
And we still have our people to serve and lead, as it were. At what stage do you stop knocking at a door?
You don't stop. That's the unfortunate part about diplomacy. There's no dead end. You do not stop. What diplomat or diplomatic processes have and do is you run parallel processes. You don't neglect and ignore other responsibilities in the country or as a nation. You do not. But you keep on knocking, especially a country like South Africa that always talks about diplomacy. South Africa always say, our first choice is the diplomatic solutions to international problems.
Sure.
You don't stop, but you don't neglect or you don't give that. What you can do is to give that less attention. You understand? And actually, that is how diplomacy works, but they don't stop. You keep on knocking and with hope that the door will open. I mean, look at countries like Russia and America. Look at how America is hostile to Iran. But they still keep their diplomatic offices open.
They still keep it open.
In Washington and Tehran. Understand? It's because you have hope that one day you will have an administration that is, look at the relationship of Trump and Putin. How in less than a month, you were saying less than 2 months.
No, because they've got boy crushes on each other. Those two.
That is diplomacy, even if he says boy crashes. Oh, but that's where diplomacy works, to say maybe Putin sits and say, maybe America will have Trump back, who is more reasonable, who I can talk
who
to.
Likes
more,
who likes me.
In fact, whoever,
who wishes he was me.
Yes. Yes. And that's why you do it. But I think we shouldn't waste time as a nation begging our trade partners continuously at the expense of other opportunities.
That's why I'm asking that question, that for how long do we carry on like this, especially now where you are dealing with a government of petulant men, man babies, if you will. The fact that even at a diplomatic level, Secretary of State Rubio
refuses,
can use words like, you must be grateful.
Yeah.
You know, the minute someone says you must be grateful, that says to me, maybe I don't want to be doing anything with you, because you throw it back in my face.
Exactly.
I mean, the other day, Elon Musk was talking about how because of his satellites, Ukraine are able to communicate and whatever else, and have access to the internet, etc. And that if he switches off his satellite, like, which government uses words like that?
Well, they and
then I think the Polish prime minister or president got involved because he can see it's wrong. You guys are being childish here. But the first thing Secretary of State Marco Rubio will say is, you must be grateful for America. In diplomacy do we use words like, you must be grateful? And why should we want to work with children like that?
Well, Tato, it's their money, it's their power. They still regard themselves as a superpower. But we have responded. Yeah. We have responded in one element, and I appreciate being a South African.
Yeah.
This past week, Minister Motsoaledi responded to some of these utterances and arrogance of the USA to say they can keep their money. Yeah. We can afford the loss of that 17% of PEPFAR within our budget. You see, that's the kind of response we need. That's the kind of leadership that we need as a nation. The Motsoaledi's kind of leadership position to say, you know what, we are not going to waste time looking when America don't take the US aid funding and all. Please don't. Motsoaledi goes to the president and goes to the minister of finance and said, look, I've got crisis, I need money.
Yeah.
Here's my motivation, and here this is where we can find the money.
He even quoted me. He says, we cannot waste this crisis. Minister Motsoaledi, I see you.
But I told you that since his time at Home Affairs, he's one of the ministers that watches this show. And I can tell you in confidence that he was, since his time at Home Affairs. Again, it's an opportunity, and he used that opportunity. He approached the Minister of Finance, he approached the Treasury, he approached his lieutenants in the Ministry of Health or the Department of Health, said, what can we do?
And I've been saying for 2 months, we have an opportunity. African leaders have never had a more ripe opportunity right now to shine.
Yes. To say, we can do it ourselves.
To make it about the people and not about themselves. To deliver in a way there's never ever been delivery before. The fact that you go to Kenya a week ago, President Ruto reached out to Odinga let's work together.
Yeah.
Odinga is now prime minister.
That's where the political leadership cares or think for the people. They want to deliver.
But. Do you think Ruto is doing this because he cares about his people? Or do you think he's doing this because his ratings are here and he's now desperate for a plan?
And the people of Kenya are pushing up since the struggle. Chato, it's in both ways.
Yeah.
He may be sitting there to redeem himself, to redeem his party for what he did last year. You understand? And to go and take one of the, you know, stalwarts of opposition, Raila Odinga, before he was a leader and after being a leader.
Isn't Odinga son of Odinga Odinga?
Yes, he's the son of Odinga Odinga.
Odinga Odinga, yes.
He was a prime minister, a president before.
Yes.
But he's very popular.
Yeah.
And for President Ruto to reach out to him, it is because President Ruto has studied the ground, turf, and say, this guy is gaining momentum and the ground.
He's got the ear of the youth.
Yes, and he may topple me in the next elections, which are in 3 years' time.
Yeah.
But let me pull him in, pardon me, to come and work with me. I always say, if it benefits the people, swallow your pride. Stop the ego and just do it. Then what you will have in Kenya or in South Africa, you will have peace. There'll be less riots. Odinga will be able to go and tell his followers to say, I am now in government. They are listening to me. I'm going to influence policy.
Mm.
You understand what I'm saying? I'm going to influence policy. Then you have an achievement. If in the next 6 months, Odinga goes back to his followers, even Ruto goes back to his followers, the Kanu, and they have forgot the name of the other party, and they say, this is what we have achieved for working together in the last 6 months. And this is what we have achieved. And the nation says we are seeing progress, continue working together for the next 1 year.
Sure.
You have serviced your ego. You have protected your party, but you have given the people something. You understand? I'm not an ANC supporter or member. I'm worried about the health situation in the country. I care about the people who are going to lose the ARVs because of US aid withdrawal. And then Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi and his team come up with a solution and says to the government, we have a proposal and we have the solution. I will support such a thing any day, because it is an unselfish move.
Sure.
That protects the people, that helps the people. You are delivering to the people. I wish the Minister of Justice, Mamoluk Kubai, could rise and say to the Justice Department or the judge, can we clean up the courts? Can we find a way, you know, can we find a way of moving? So it shows where there's a collective and you listen to experts. Luckily, Dr. Aaron Mulani is a medical doctor by profession and he was in that department or ministry before.
And he gets it.
So he gets it when experts talk to him. You know, so it can be done, Tato. It can be done if we had leaders and political office bearers who listen, who are not corrupt, who don't have egos, that this idea came with the DA or the PAC or the Freedom Front Plus. It doesn't matter and it shouldn't matter who brought the proposal on the table. Even if the DA can go out and claim glory, it's okay. As long as it works for the residents or for the citizens of this country.
There's I think it's a Swahili saying, harambe.
Yes.
Like, let's pull together.
Let's pull together.
Tirisano moho.
Hey.
Dude, there has never been a better opportunity right now for Africa to say, you know, we've been this giant afraid to walk.
To rise.
Because we might hit the ends. And it's time for us to flipping stand and walk.
You know, Africa should not even walk yet. Just by rising,
just by standing up
and show how gigantic you are as a nation. You understand? We've got everything to can actually tell the world, like Ibrahim Traore is doing in Burkina Faso. With all our minerals, we can tell the world, we will take them where it suits us, where it benefits us.
Yes.
But if we don't do that, government administration is very simple. Politics are complicated, but government administration is very simple. The laws are there. The budget is there. Implement what is the policy of the government. It's very simple.
Yeah.
But when you've got supposed to be implementers who do not know, who have no clue,
yeah,
you will find the president of the republic being shocked at every state, being shocked.
Mm.
And that's the problem. We were shocked this week when the minister of police, is it Senzo? I think it's Senzo, the minister of police, telling us that the Palapala report is going to be kept secret. We were shocked. Why are we shocked? When nothing of President Rai, he sealed it. The court sealed his bank statement campaign. The minister is sealing an investigation to an allegation of corruption against the president. And we are okay with it.
What would you have us do?
No. Tato, we or the minister, if the president of the republic, there's dollars in the country that were not declared, put this thing in a public space. Mm. Why cases of people like, let me even use an ANC minister, Nkadimeng. The case of Nkadimeng, it's in a public forum. Why is the case of President Ramaphosa not in a public forum? You see the double standards.
National security reasons.
What reasons? You're an individual, you had dollars in your mattress. Tato, go and put $100,000 in your mattress. Let's see what will happen to you.
Yeah,
you.
But if the deal was not completed, I'm allowed to have dollars there and not declare the motion.
No. How did they get into the country? We are not going to get into that story because the Palapala issue will forever be with us until President Ramaphosa leaves the office.
But I love what you say, that all Africa needs to do is stand up.
Africa just needs to stand up.
Booker T. Washington famously said, "No one can hold you down without staying down with you."
Yes.
And the sooner we realize that we're being held ransom, when we actually are fully capable, if we had the political will, to stand up and do right by our people. There is no reason why a single person on this continent should go to bed without a meal. Not
exactly.
Zero reason.
Zero. For that. Africa needs to rise. If we can rise, we are a giant.
You're subsetting.
You know, when we rise, there'll be ants and millipedes and everything falling off our bodies. And we'll realize that these people, these other countries, are actually small little puppets on us. Look at what Russia did under sanctions. Look at, you know, people call Russia Mother Russia. Under sanctions, under embargo.
Forget Russia. We could learn from the Nats.
Exactly.
We could learn from the Nats.
Under
sanctions. That's how your Sassels were born.
Yes.
That's how some of the greatest engineers on this planet rose in this country.
When did the Nats took over? 1948.
Yeah.
I only say the age of my dad. 1948.
Sure.
The Nats were born. They apparently died in 1994.
Sure.
But look at what they have done for their country. I don't want to say for this country because it was their country. We had our homeland.
It was for them.
Yes, it was for them. But you know what I said to somebody this week, Tado? No matter how racist they were, no matter how much they hated us, cheered us, buried us alive and all that, and they wanted us away from them by creating homeland states and whatever, they still gave that little budget to the Mangupes and the Transkeys and all of this world.
Or to their puppets.
To their puppets. And if the puppet did not draw the line, and the puppet in this instance decided to lean a little bit to the liberation movements, they will remove the puppet and replace them with another one. But they still gave them money to do what? To feed their people a little bit. Not to say the apartheid regime cared about blacks in TBVC states. No. For us not to rebel and come to the mainland. Give them just enough to stay there. Just enough, it was what? People must have accommodation. People must have housing. People must have education. That's why the former TBVC states, including Bovenda, they had universities, they had schools that were functioning. It was to keep us there. You understand? While they were building a massive economy, while they were training engineers and artisans, under how many years? 1948 to 1994. How many years? Oh, almost 50, 70 years, I understand, of embargo, trade embargo with the world. And they were not only faced by the trade and economic embargo and sanctions, they were also faced by, in inverted commas, terrorists of the PAC, of ASAPO, and of the ANC attacking them in their country. Their security was compromised. They knew that one day, these black people, we did it. We just stood up one day, although in faces. We stood up in 1960. We stood up in the late, we stood up in the early 70s, mid 70s, and the 80s. We kept on rising. And every time we stood up, even if it was once in 10 years, every time African people stood up.
The writing became more apparent on the wall.
Yes. You know, to say, one day they will rise from all corners of the country at once. And then they were forced to engage. People must not think the protest and the liberation struggle and the guerrilla attacks on soft targets of white people, the bombing of Sassol, the APLA attacks on churches and student buses. And I'm not glorifying killing people or attacking people. But if people think that did not work, they must think twice.
Incrementally, every single thing added up.
Yes, to can bring the Nats down.
There's a saying, don't think de Klerk was being a hero. He had no choice.
No, he had no choice.
He had zero
choice. The net was closing up on the net's government. Even if they were trying to bribe the former frontline states and manipulate them, Mozambique, they isolated Zimbabwe. You know, so they started making friends with Zambia and all that. Even if they were doing that, Botswana and Namibia, the people still were believing that African people in the still occupied Azania will rise. And we did that.
Sure.
And if Africa doesn't rise, we don't even have to shake ourselves. Just by standing up, the world will respect us. We need to rise.
But having said that, you know, looking at the toxic race back and forth that's happening on social media, obviously emboldened by Trump's disinformation about the horrible things that are happening in South Africa, people's land is being taken away, we're going to withhold aid. You need to remember that the 30% that voted no to the referendum, they bred. Those are the kids now on social media who are emboldened and can talk shit about this country.
Yeah.
So don't think they came out of nowhere. They're the children of the 30%
yeah.
who had a problem with blacks being given the franchise.
I think we don't always need the majority to can be victorious.
Sure.
You can have the minority with level-headed that are united to be victorious,
sure.
to rise and bring up issues. We don't need all black people in this country, including the capitulated ones, to can take this country forward.
Sure.
You need bold people. You need civil servants who are not afraid to tell politicians that I'm not going to do this because it is not delivering to the people or it's unethical. You understand? If we have the few that can, and I always say, if we can have at least half of the cabinet, half, to think like Aaron Motsoaledi, to think like Mamoluko Kubayi.
I love
Brother. Understand? If we can have just a few of them who think like that, will move somewhere.
Sure.
If we can have a minister of police who believes in skids cotton donor when there's crime, and we have soldiers that, with a caring minister, to say, once our military is happy, our borders will be secured.
Sure.
That's the level of thinking we want. If we can arrive at that level, but we will never arrive there as long as we have this oldies in. I'm telling you, they are contaminated, Tato. And the problem now with the GNU is there's this corrupt ANC bunch of old people that have been there. They've been filtering them. When the new young ones come, they get absorbed into this. They get the taste of corruption. They get there. They see that, but not delivering, nothing will happen to me. I'll be moved to another ministry. Now the noisemakers, the DA, Inkatha Freedom Party, our favorite brothers in Patriotic Alliance, they've been swallowed into that. They were made to taste the cream of the cake. And they don't see anything wrong anymore in not delivering. Nothing will happen to them. Ramaphosa will, after they vote the budget, he will compensate this once next year before the budget vote and move them to other ministries. Then they feel more important. And that's where the problem, because they taste. They are not ethical and genuine leaders that you can bank on. So leadership crisis, it's part of the problem. We lack ethical leaders with a backbone who will not be afraid to lose. And some of them, they have money, Tato. They are well off. Me and you, we spoke about Katin McKenzie. People, Katin McKenzie is well off. He doesn't need the state salary. He's a well off. He's a multi-millionaire, if not a billionaire. He doesn't need this money. I don't say it's corrupt, but I'm saying he can stand up in cabinet and say, you know what, this is nonsense. But they're not doing it. Everybody's focusing on their little piece of cells.
Yeah, but you got to remember that some people would rather risk that perception that you now have, but be in the system to try and change it from inside.
Yes.
Than risk being out of the system and having zero control.
And a lot of people believe that you must stay inside and fight from the inside. Mm. But we must be able, as citizens and voters and observers, we must be able to see. You see what the DA is doing?
Sure.
Today, I can tell you, thanks to the DA for the vet thing, we can say whatever we want. They fought this battle. Not alone, MKP and EFF are not in government. Mm. But if you look at what has been happening, the DA fought a solo battle on this VAT thing.
And grand guys, they are actually working towards the next election.
Yeah.
The bigger scheme of things.
It's that.
That'll get the bigger picture.
It's less than 2 years left. It's almost a year and 3 months left to go to the next elections.
Yeah.
Local government. The DA is working on that. The DA is going to say to the people on the ground, the people in Tshwane.
Lebonimos.
So if it wasn't of me, the DA, you would have paid 2% more tax. You understand? Yeah. And I'm saying, I don't care. The DA it's a racist white liberal organization that is focusing on the interest of the exploiters and white people. Mm. It's doing fuck all for me. Mm. But where they do right, let us rise and say, thank you, the GA. I won't vote for you, but thank you. Mm. And that is reality. That is the truth.
Sure. Yeah. You live in Centurion.
Verwoestbeek. Yeah, I still call it Centurion Verwoestbeek.
How are you voting in 2 years?
But I've made it. I've made it right now. Let me tell you right now.
Yeah.
I'm caught up. No, but I will still vote for my political party. But if I was gonna vote with my mind,
yeah,
not my heart.
But you need to vote with
service delivery.
Yeah, yeah.
My water was off again for the last 3 days.
Anyway.
Anyway, again.
Yeah.
So but between Action SA and Freedom Front Plus, is that the Freedom Front Plus is swag?
Yeah.
In Centurion. Action SA in Tshwane, the region,
sure,
to be honest, they've started appealing to me.
Mm.
They are making the right noises.
Sure.
And I don't know whether it's their mayor who said something very profound. I like what she said.
Mm.
She said, I don't care which political party I come from, for as long as there's a resident of Tshwane that meets my service as the mayor, I will serve that person. I will not even ask which political party he or she belongs to.
So
that's the language I want to hear. Mm. The mayor of Tshwane is serving the residents of Tshwane.
That's Dr. Moyemos, ne?
Yes. Yes. Dr. Masis.
Nasipi.
Nasipi, yes.
Yeah, she must use a squatter camp song. Uzozu Moya. Moya.
So my voting will be determined later, early next year, where I'm going, where the flow is going.
But you're leaning towards the Moya there, though.
I'm happy with Moya.
Sure.
So far.
And it's not because you sent her an email and she responded.
Hey, and she acted. She acted.
Guys, you must, wherever you live, you must get in touch with your politicians, email them, petition them, find out that some even have the phone numbers out there.
Yes, yes.
Use them.
There's an Action SA councillor in my ward,
yeah.
Frolich.
Sure.
I've got more access to that woman than the political, my political party is not represented.
Sure.
But than the ward councillor of the one who's sitting in the chamber is from the DA, the one sitting in the chamber. This one is not sitting there. I've got more access to the Action SA, and it's because of campaigning, I understand.
Yeah.
But you are right. The people, actually, if you know where she lives, you must go and press that bell and knock at their doors.
Even if you didn't vote for the person, find out who the opposition are in your ward and have all the phone numbers.
Yes.
Work those numbers.
Let them work for you.
Let them work for you. Use them. We're out of time.
Thank you, Bratato.
We need to go. We didn't even go through everything, but...
Where did we leave?
We need to talk about the hospitals, state of public hospitals.
We can postpone that, yes, yes.
And we'll also talk about Trump. Listen, we'll be talking about Trump every week for the next 4 years.
Trump and no, let's leave Trump. The only thing with Trump is that his white, blue-eyed boy is seeming to be suffering now. Elon Musk businesses are suffering in the world at the moment.
It's
firing.
There are people who are boycotting Tesla.
All over the world, not only Tesla, anything that smells Elon Musk business, whether it's the Starlink or Tesla, what it's backfiring now.
And again, shout out to Canada. Canada are pushing back,
yes,
and that is the only way to deal with a bully. You push back. So well done, Canada. Shout out. And the brand new prime minister coming in strong.
Strong, yeah.
Ready to listen. If we need to rumble, let's rumble.
That's the advantage of having young people into power.
Yeah.
Imagine if he was 70-something, he wouldn't take Trump up.
Yeah.
But honestly, there's no thumbs up to Canada. We can talk about it next week.
Absolutely. We are out of here. Where do we get a hold of you?
Butsangm@gmail.com.
Yes, sir.
And WhatsApp 082-485-9100. And on social media handles, @BotsangM. And thanks to the viewers, the comments on the podcast. Thanks to that. I like that. We get grilled here and there, but I'm enjoying it. And thanks to the followers and the viewers. Even the spies, Dr. Mutsualedi just sent a comment there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, also, we're not here to be liked. We're just here to hopefully put a mirror in front of you. And if you feel that is not your reflection, you can also reflect that in the comments. And let's keep the conversation going.
Thanks, brother, man.
I think that is what is important. That is all she wrote. Thanks for tuning in to our What a Week, #Politrix with Fresh and Botsang. Coming to you from Amp Studios, downtown Johannesburg, we're part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out Trevor and Pezulu Works for the cinematography, and Otis the Flow Fraser for all of our imaging. Our executive producer is Keletso Modisa Gain. Till next week, have a wow week. In spite of yourselves, we're out of here.